Yeah. No, I'm not going to do radio voice. Busted pencils, fully leaded, education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, and me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Yes, Saturday. Saturday show across civic media. And yes, we know podcasters, you're downloading and taking it wherever you can get it, when you can get it. But, you know, we love doing the Saturday show. And for anybody out there in their car, and Johnny, now, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota, people could be listening right now to Busted Pencils. And so welcome to the civic media family. I think it's so exciting to recognize that, you know, civic media, its vision, you know, democracy, talk radio, not throwing stones, but, you know, talking factually about things, our neighbors, our community,
No, but, Tim, you're onto it, man. You know, local radio refreshed. You know, we're not here telling you, like, not this show, telling you, like, regurgitating news headlines or polarizing things. That's not happening on civic media, although you can't get great news updates. You know, this is, especially this hour, Tim, that we have, this is talk, is educated educators talking education. It is back to school time officially, like the back to school sales we started seeing 2 months ago. I mean, teachers are in professional developments. If you're a regular listener and you listen to the podcast drops, that's right. If you're new to us, welcome. But you could grab podcast drops on the civic media site 3 times a week, mm-hmm. you know, and then catch us on this broadcast. But we were talking this week with a rural superintendent. He was awesome. We were talking about back to school a bit and the AI discussions and the exciting things happening in his district. And, you know, that's a regular conversation here at Busted Pencils, Tim. But it is fall. Oh. We are back to school. Most teachers have set up their classrooms or are doing that right now. Some students are already back in the classroom. I know most of the places where people are listening from, that happens after the holiday coming up, because we squeeze every last bit of summer out of, you know, our vacations as we can. Tim, I was back in class this week.
Ooh. You were back in class, and you know, actually before the show, we chit chat a little bit. You were talking about, you know, like, I set up a tent at the farmer's market, and I was like, holy crap, you've been growing food all this year, and you're what? I'm like, what are you selling? You're not selling anything. You're actually at the farmer's market in a tent, doing some good service, good deeds, strengthening the community. Johnny, I mean, tell us more.
Well, Tim, I'm a big fan of local farmers markets because, you know, I actually do grow food, although I'm not like actually a farmer. But that was my first entry point into learning about local farmers markets, which I know, listeners, they're everywhere out by you too. But these are great places not only to make human connections, but to engage in your community. And not like, unlike many local farmers market, our local one, you know, has opportunities for people in politics and local organizations. Well, it's the Brothers and Sisters, Big Brothers, Big Sisters Club, YMCA, you know, just name a few, in our local school districts and our reps. You know, we get out there and have conversations with people, especially as we're getting back to school. So yeah, man, this week we were outside, you know, setting up opportunities for kids to grab school supplies, more just to, you know, touch base with families, introduce new teachers, get them out in the community, because hey, educator out there, you know, it's ever important to have that connection to your town, to that connection to your local community, even if you don't live there per se, you know, to get out and not just be someone who the kids in your class see in the classroom, but, you know, or awkwardly bump into at the grocery store. Right. But yeah, that always was fun, Tim, when you were teaching, you remember that, like, you run and they look at you like, what are you doing here?
Yeah,
and
man.
Like, I'm a regular grown up. I have to buy food too. You know, but to a student, the idea of their teacher is like, you know, it's almost like they're a vacuum or a piece of technology that gets put back in the closet at the end of the day. You know, I've even had kids have asked me that when I was teaching younger grades, Do you live back there? Like, do you live in the school? No, I live in a house just like the other teachers here. Hey, but no, nonetheless, you know, I digress. But yeah, we were out there, you know, introducing new teachers. We had some new administrators in our local district. So they were out there kind of pressing the flesh, meeting people in community, families, and saying, hey, we're excited about the school year. Because it is exciting times as we gear up, you know, as kids, you kind of remember, I'm sure Jacob, we could pick on you for this because Tim, he talks about his anxiousness for your producer's choice on Friday.
Yeah.
All of us remember the having a case of the Sundays. It's like Sunday and you're like, oh man, school tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's going to be Monday.
Yeah.
Well, this is the week, these couple of weeks where if you're a kid out there, even if you're a parent too, well, parents, you're probably getting excited to get your kids back in school. But
yeah,
but the idea, like if you're a kid, it's like a massive case of the Sunday. Summer is over. And even though you're excited because like new classmates, a new teacher and fresh start, it's still a little bit like, uh-oh. No more YouTube in the middle of the day. No more, you know, snacking on stuff whenever. I know if you're a parent out there like me, you're counting down the days. I mean, my grocery bill is going to drop significantly now that my kids will be back in school. You know, I'll be less of a summer camp counselor planning activities all hours of the day. But no, we were out in Farmers Market, which I think is just a great place for people always to get together, man.
Let me ask you though too, I mean, because of all those things that you're talking about, but I mean, let's not lose sight, you're handing out school supplies to
more is just a way for kids to be like, let's get some stuff, let's talk about school. Okay. You know, I'm you know, I talk a lot. I mean, people listening know this. It's like, geez, Johnny just goes.
Wait, Jacob, did you know that?
No, I had never noticed that about Johnny.
Yeah. So I mean, it's called the gift of gab.
Yeah.
It's one of my superpowers, right? But the thing is, like, having conversations. Tim, you talked about this. What do you remember about your teachers? It's being real and seeing you as whatever age you're at, appropriately seeing you as like a being, like as a whole person, even though you're still growing up and you're still a youngin, a young blood out there. But it's just kind of an opportunity to have conversation. Hey, man, you like to do your math with mechanical pencils or you like your trusty number twos? You go with a pre-sharpened or do you rock a sharpener in your pencil case? You know, just these kinds of conversations that help with the Sunday scaries that I call the summer scaries, the end of summer. Get a little excited about school. You can't fill your entire school supply list there, but you could pick out a few like eraser caps and, you know, fun stuff and just chop it up with new teachers, give some high fives and, you know, chit chat about older kids. You could talk about, you know, are you excited to use a TI-85, Texas Instrument 85 in your math classes? You're taking pre-calc this year in high school. You know, you just kind of start to have those everyday conversations around, hey, do you have a summer job? What's your plans? What electives did you sign up for? Just having those conversations that see a person and those students who are about to be back in class.
Yeah, like what AI app will you be using this school year?
No, that's not a conversation I'm going to have. You know,
Johnny, the TS-22 or whatever you just said, I'm kind of going like, you know what? I got my old trusty AI. I got no need for any Casio TS-3257. You know, decimal calculator, man. I got me some AI.
This is Tim hating on math class. No, you can't use AI yet to do this stuff really well. But I bet it's not too far off.
Yeah.
Really, honestly, I bet it's not too far off that there's going to be some AI assisted technologies that replace, you know, your handheld calculator, where you do all your different graphing functions and solve, you know, quadratic equations. And you know, it's not, you don't have to write out that big formula anymore and plug it in and do it by hand. You know, even back when I was a high school student, Tim, and, you know, it was the trusty TI-85 still being used in schools across this country. But it's a great tool. Just chopping it up with the youth.
Got two questions for you, though, because you made me think of something here. Like, you know, the drafting pencil, the number two pencil.
Yeah, man, tools of the trade.
Are you offering them busted pencils, Johnny?
No, man. No broken ones. No broken ones.
Oh.
They do sometimes say, aren't you that weird guy with a podcast? And I'm always like,
tune in for Busted Pencil.
That's what I said. Yeah, Busted Pencil. Yeah, bust it right in front of them and give them one, man. Say, like, you get a Busted Pencil, dude.
Yeah, and you know what I need to do, Tim, is I need to make more coffee mugs with the Busted Pencils logo on it, because every teacher that listens locally or even not locally, you should have a Busted Pencils coffee mug on your desk. You know, we should have something special for you. I definitely hand out a ton of stickers, right? There's always Busted Pencil stickers that can catch us anywhere live, which, you know, stay tuned for the school year, because Tim and I do pop up from time to time in the live. We'd love to do a live show with Jacob. He's yet to do one with us, but we give out a ton of swag. You know, we have a great conversation. We usually have a lot of teacher guests all in one on those live shows. So stay tuned this fall for some exciting stuff like that. I guarantee you there's going to be something near you where you could catch us.
Now, do you ever have students walk up and say, "Oh, Mr. Lupinacci, will you bust my pencil for me?"
No,
it would be an honor to have my pencils busted, would you?
Oh, man, I think there we go, man. Yeah. You know, we're going to show up and bust pencils for the kids, man. A total busted pencil. No, John, I know you got an agenda for the rest of the show, but, you know, we're kind of coming up on the break. But I got to ask you this question because, you know, Jacob and I, you know, have had a, well, it's not going to come out yet, but you know, just thinking about.
You guys pre-recorded homeroom without.
Yeah, we pre-recorded
homeroom. My daughter's birthday. Just to fill the listeners in on this cryptic conversation. My daughter's birthday and they pre-recorded a homeroom. All right, let it rip, Tim. What do you got to ask me?
What do you remember about homeroom as a high school student, Johnny Lupinacci, 11th grade? What did homeroom?
11th grade, dang.
Yeah, what did homeroom?
Junior year.
What did homeroom mean to you?
Man, I had homeroom for us was interesting. It was just kind of before or after lunch, and I can't remember where it was slotted for us in the school day junior year. But it was a way to have like half the high school at lunch, half the high school, you know, in their homeroom. And we played a lot of euchre. This is a Midwest boy here, you know. We talked some good life stuff because junior year, remember, you're like almost an adult. You're not quite a senior. It's not quite senior year, but you know, you've already kind of like grown a bit. You're no longer freshman and sophomore. You're less likely getting in trouble. You're kind of chilling through the school day. You got a little heavier content course wise. So you're either working on homework, studying for a test that you might have later that day, or a lot of us were playing euchre.
All right. So hold on there though, because I'm thinking about this because I saw Jacob's eyes light up when you said when you had homeroom, and that's what is going to be on Monday's homeroom that we pre-recorded. We found out that what homeroom means to you, what it means to Jacob, what it means to me, there's a diversity of what homeroom meant. And we actually are kind of putting this out there. And so, hey, tune in on Monday, man, for a homeroom, because I think you're going to find it interesting. How did you have homeroom? That's coming up on Monday. When we get back, though, Johnny Lupinacci has the notebook filled with lots of questions, higher education, where are we headed? We'll be right back. You got to be careful when you hear that music. Do not bang your head on the steering wheel. Pay attention. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Me, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board. Saturday, one full hour. Great warm-up conversation, but you know, listeners, though, are kind of probably out there going, that's great. I love hearing what you guys are up to. But what's going on? Johnny, you actually, you're kind of now in control, and I'm going to hand it off to you, let you set this up.
People want to hear Tim get grilled. All right, let's get
let's grill him. Let's put him on the stand. Let's give him a deposition of his week. No, Tim, you came in hot to our Wednesday show. You know, no, producer's choice. I'm getting all all mixed up in my change of schedule, but you know, we're back to it in the classroom. And so figuring out this balance, but Tim, you came directly to our show the other day, Producer's Choice. Listener, if you didn't get to hear it, it was probably top five Producer's Choice of the year so far. You know, you got to grab it and listen to it. It dropped on Friday, so it's still fresh, but it was a great, great episode. But Tim, you came into it hot. You're like, hey, I just got in the door from participating on a panel, right? And that's something we do as professors. And Tim now is a, you know, big time administrator. He's a shot caller in higher ed. But, you know, as educators too, teachers, whatever, at any point in our career, Tim, sometimes you get tapped to go be part of a panel discussion or to present or be part of a community dialogue or a town hall, you know, where you discuss a topic. Mm-hmm. And of course, we always are chopping up topics here on Busted Pencils. So no surprise to me that you would get tapped to go have a conversation in public, because this is your forte, my guy. Mm-hmm. Right? You can facilitate a conversation, not talk too much like I talk way too much when I do these things, listeners know. But, you know, you can ask questions, you can listen, and you can offer great insight. Because, you know, not being ageist here, but pro-age, you got experience, my guy. You've done some really great stuff in some different communities, and you have both a bird's eye view of higher education and really public education, pre-K through adult learning. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine there's no surprise about you getting tapped to go participate in your state capital, right? Mm-hmm. So you came in hot. You told us a little bit about it. And I said, Tim, hold it for the Saturday show, because I'm going to interview you about it. So just take us back to your panel. Tell us a little bit about what it was about. And from what I understand, it kind of matches a conversation we've been having here at Busted Pencils. So I'm going to ask you to elaborate on some parts. But just for a listener out there, and for Jacob and I, because we told you the other day, don't tell us now, tell us on Saturday. So now tell us, what is this panel you got tapped to go participate in?
Well, it was the Pennsylvania Higher Education Summit in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah, as you said, Johnny, the capital. And it was a half-day summit where they came together, and it was put together by some of the media in the Harrisburg area, asking the question of, you know, the future of higher education. And it was set up and framed very much by the standpoint of understanding the reality that higher education is facing, not all the diversity, equity, inclusion, things like that, but just a real hard reality, which is, hey, 18-year-olds, there just aren't as many. And in fact, lots of colleges are suffering from enrollment declines, and realizing that that is a fact, but then also realizing that out in the work world, there are lots of people who need an education who aren't 18-year-olds. They might be an apprentice in an electric type of school. They might be already, you know, kind of saying like, I want to get a new career. And so how is higher education going to show up in this moment? And realize that workforce, truly, workforce development and higher education, are they going to come together to create some economic opportunities for the workforce? And with those economic opportunities, does this offer higher education also an opportunity to really serve the communities in which they are existing geographically, physically, in that sense? And so, you know, it was framed very, very, you know, pointedly by the chancellor of the Pennsylvania system, who kind of it just laid that out very, very, you know, matter of fact, less students, dwindling enrollments, workforce industry out there saying, hey, but we got a bunch of people, we're very interested in education, higher education industry, how do you work together to solve this issue, and that's actually quite a few issues in there. And I was asked then to sit on a panel and talk about what was going on at my institution, and what my vision of what a future like that might look like. Because in my new administrative role, I am focused on what they call academic innovation and continuing studies, which is bridging out to create more opportunities to serve students and have education options that are actually more designed by the future students based on the needs that they have. So workforce based on industry. Setting that up, Johnny, so that when we come back, then you can really grill me, because you can see right now I'm frightened and I'm holding on to this break because I needed to catch my breath and get ready. Busted Pencils. We'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. It's the Saturday broadcast. It's fall. We're chopping it up. Dr. Tim Slecker here with me, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and chairman of the board, producer Jacob. We love having you here with us, listener. Tim, in the last segment, you were talking about participating in the summit, and I just imagined you and several other academics with your backpacks, you know, and your briefcases and laptops, hiking up a mountain to the summit.
To the summit.
Know, not that kind of summit, though. More like a gathering to have a discussion, like a public square kind of forum, Q&A session, I'm imagining, where you all were talking about, like you said, the changing landscape of higher education. And in particular, you know, for you, talking about the exciting things and academic innovation and partnerships and, you know, really, I would say from just my perspective, you know, highlighting the community partnership focus of the work you're doing at your institution. And that I believe is a key part of what, you know, higher ed institutions addressing the change in landscape are all doing right now. But Tim, in past shows, we've talked about this a little bit and we've been saying, so what's different? We're all like, hey, these times are changing. There's stuff that higher ed needs to pay attention to. And we've talked about it. For a listener, you can resonate with this, or maybe you're new to this. There is probably in my lifetime, the highest level of distrust or discontent with, we'll say, professors or, you know, higher education than at least ever in my lifetime.
Right.
You know, and for some of it, for good reason, there's been some, certainly we've talked about it, some strong efforts put into distance, you know, everyday conversations and important decisions being made, you know, to sort of say, well, we are the experts and we know so much and we're just here studying and figuring things out. The we being professors at whatever institutions near you, you know, the vibe is out there. But I would say more and more, Tim, while it's super important that there are, you know, experts out there, and I want to say that, like, people with PhDs are experts in their area of study, right? They're like, maybe we've talked about it, but here on the show before, you might be at a university, you might be like the world's leading engineer in plastic coatings, right? Where you've focused your entire, you know, career on innovation and knowledge around that area. You bring this up sometimes, Tim, like philosophers who maybe are like, you know, classics philosopher. And they know everything about like Plato and Socrates, and they teach these inspiring classes on our college campuses. And certainly they're important and we're not dissing them. But one of the things we've talked about here on the show, Tim, and, you know, it's out there and kind of the public discourse, is that what do we do in this particular moment where you had kind of mentioned that the summit you were at was laying out and acknowledging less people are following that sort of pathway that for the better part of us at 40 years or more was just business as usual, like graduate from high school, go to college, or else you're a failure, which we know we're not saying here. That's
huge
problem. That's a huge problem of like sort of the pathway, just the assumption that, that's the path. It's done a rock star job of separating people from like, hey, I'm educated or I'm uneducated. I'm in the trades. I don't have an education versus, hey, I'm in, you know, this college degree and I'm educated. We know that that's hogwash. There's some really smart people in the trades and vice versa. There are some not so smart people who got degrees. So coming back to it, Tim, we said like there's less 18-year-olds falling like following into just a four-year institution or even just traditional school, even if those are two-year degrees. We've talked about the economy that we're in, right? A solution in the past of declining enrollment, less 18-year-olds or less 18-year-olds choosing to go to school or accessibility to classes, even if you're like 24 and like, hey, I'm done with my service in the military, I would like to maybe go to college. Access to those programs may be prohibitive. So what one of the knee-jerk reactions I'll say of higher ed was to just charge more, right? Like, oh, we got less students. Okay, let's just up tuition and keep the boat going in the same direction. Well, we've realized not only in this economy, but that bubble bursts at some point. I think it got way bigger than it should have ever gotten in terms of the cost of tuition raised for, you know, people who want to get a degree. But we've talked about that there are financial realities that universities have to address. There are changes in generational expectations, right? Like Jacob has spoken about this, different generations. Like, hey, I know a lot of people that are younger who are like, I don't necessarily think college is the right place for me. 20, 30 years ago, maybe even still today, I don't know, I think it's changing. That's a taboo conversation. Or if you're a parent listening and you have someone of a younger generation, you're like, oh, that's the, my kid said that and I'll tell you I had conniption fit. You know, like they got to go to college or what are they going to do? Well, more and more young people are saying that might not be for me. In addition to that, Tim, we've said that like the these young learners know what they need. And they often aren't getting that at colleges and finding other places where their learning needs are met. All that's to say, if you're in higher ed and you're not addressing, like Tim, you talk about academic innovation, community programs that are connected to careers, and just overall thinking about how do we build more trust and strengthen what we do? Like, what's our brand? Right. I know higher ed folks out there might be cringing saying, Johnny's on here talking about higher educators needing to have a brand. But yes, having an identity that here's what we do and why coming to such and such place to learn is a good fit for you. Sort of like strong customer satisfaction. I hate to be fully in the business model, but this is also a reality of the time we're in. Are we serving democracy well? Are we serving community well? And so, Tim, I'm wondering from your time at the summit, what are some of the standouts around that conversation being had? Like, were your eyes kind of wide open? Did you hear some cool stuff where like a light bulb went off and you were like, ooh, I got to remember that and share it with my comrades?
Man, that was a lot. Jacob, man. All right. Yes. So get right into the meat of it. So on my panel, there was also a vice president of student affairs from another higher ed institution and a president from another public. And all three of us were public regional higher education. And, you know, quickly moving on to the workforce and saying, if we're going to be in service with industry and communities in offering upskilling credentials, degrees, to that student body of which they're going to be, what do we need to do to be in a place that makes success happen because these are not people who are going to be taking classes between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. They're working full time. They, you know, have other responsibilities. They might not need to be able, or they might not even be able to be on campus, right? So how are you diversifying the curriculum? How are you making it more digestible? How is it available online? How is it available hybrid? How is it condensed to like three Saturdays? All of those things to say, because if you're going to be in service of higher education, and I really mean this, for another population, particularly here, let's just say workforce, the structures of higher education, as you pointed out, have not ever really been in service to educating adults who might be working full-time or trying to upskill. So, you know, right away, the vice president of student affairs at our institution, we now have student affairs has office hours from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. every night, realizing that, guess what? We have to be available because, like, these are students. This is the Office of Student Affairs. Students need to be able to get in touch with real people, not call us back the next day during business hours because I'm already working full time. So moving in that way too. And then the president, though, realizing that there's a clout that can come with this. And so in his geographic region in Pennsylvania, an industry, a big drug manufacturer, was about to leave the area. And through conversations with him and his faculty reaching out with some of their chemistry people, they actually partnered to come together. And this is a huge drug manufacturing company. They now have decided, because of the partnership with this university and the ability to bring in the people they need, and for the people that will continue to work there to get the education to keep this place going, they're not only are they not closing the plant, they're investing more and expanding the plant because they now see higher education as their partner in growing this business. So, you know, those are those types of things. And then I was there talking about, you know, something that I believe is a really cool opportunity, and that is working with the trades, an apprenticeship, fully an apprenticeship, and recognizing that, hey, guess what? Going through an apprenticeship is higher education. And, you know, well, it's education after it's, well, help, let me put it this way. It's an education experience. And so how do you then?
It's a learning experience.
It's a learning experience. It's a learning experience. And how then do you tell or work with tradespeople who are now saying, particularly construction, carpenters, safety people, who now see that the job site actually itself is getting more than just a trade. And they're realizing, hey, we need a little bit more. Hey, University X, can you help us with our apprentices get into a program that after they're done with their trade apprenticeship, they can then continue on to a degree in construction management, a degree in safety occupation, a degree in business entrepreneurship. And that's what I was there talking about, saying, yes, in fact, we're working with the local union and hearing very much them saying, you know, we need it online, we need it hybrid. And more importantly, we don't want to see it as a start and then who knows when we're ever going to finish because it seems so far. Can you turn this education process into more digestible certificates along the way? And so, in other words, can I get certificate one? Call that an accomplishment. Get certificate two, get certificate three, put that all together, I have my degree. That's the kind of work we're talking about very much in this realm. Johnny, I know and come back. We're going to be tight, but so you're going to have to get to a question quick if you got another one.
Bro, I'll do what I want. I do what I want, man.
Jacob will come after you. Busted Pencils, higher education, yeah, future. Oh, yeah. You know, when you hear that music, that's last segment, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. I know I was doing that quickly. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, producer, chairman of the board, Jacob Mead, Dr. Tim Slecker. Here we are, future of higher education. I kind of laid out, you know, what my panel was doing and what probably to sum that up, and then Johnny, let you hit it again. Is that we're making the structural changes needed to make sure that serving the workforce, our institution can actually do it well. So,
yeah, I love that. And it sounds like collaboratively in your institution, you are doing that inner work to say, this is what makes us unique. This is how we're building partnerships. This is how we're strengthening trust. This is how we're marketing better and delivering all the way around a high quality experience for not only a student, right? But for the community who's in partnership. So it's like a win-win-win all the way around. I love the examples of where, you know, research, teaching, service, you know, job internships, career, early career supports and pathways all come together and line up. And I think it's ever important because sadly enough, you know, in some contexts, higher ed got too used to just being business as usual in this country, you know, and it, and I emphasize business end of it. Like the customers are just going to keep on coming and they'll pay whatever.
Right.
You know? And so, and if they don't have the money, they'll get a big loan from the government. Like all that is going apart. Like that has, you know, that fireworks of a business plan have gone off and fizzled out. So I love to hear these, not just stories, but, you know, firsthand accounts of those efforts to not put our head in the sand and ignore, just say, we'll just charge tuition more and this is what we do. You know, that certainly has been some of the responses from higher ed over time. But Tim, you know, I will say a little caution to it as we do this. As a teacher, right? And we could do another whole show in this. As a historian aspect of both your and my education, Tim, is the history of public schools. Mm-hmm. And we remember the turn of the last century, not the century that you and I were both teachers in, and then it was a new century, the one we're in, but the one before, when, especially in Chicago, right, factories were saying, this is what you're going to teach the kids, and this is what we need them for. So, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but Mark Twain reminds us it sure does rhyme. And I'm not saying that this, what we're doing now, is a mistake, but I'm saying let's also remember what our school teachers fought hard for and find a balance, right, to where that, and I think that's what you're talking about, build that trust, have those partnerships of, you know, courageous new ways of working together, where it's not companies telling us what to teach,
right,
kids, but it's saying, hey, these young people got to learn something, or new students need to learn X, Y, and G to be effective in our career, and vice versa. So we're actually partnering, not teachers telling industry what they're going to get, and not industry telling teachers what to teach, but coming together and figuring it out. And I love what you're sharing. I think it's awesome you were at the summit, right? I'm not surprised, because like I said before, you bring the wisdom, you also bring the funk, which is why you're so special, right? As one of my favorite punk rock educators.
I was going to say, and the punk. Pumping you.
I'm just the punk and the funk, right? So I'm just pumping your tires, buddy, because I'm excited as my school year starts to be here with you and to be with Jacob as we, you know, chop it up and really get into the mess.
Man, I love that. Wow. How do you work on that? Yeah. You know what, though? This is, Johnny, you know, and I, you know, as we're coming down here closing, I want to emphasize a really important point you made, which is the reality of, hey, we're not talking about turning public schools or turning public higher education into a factory model that continues to just churn out, quote, workers.
Right.
No, you know, no, this is partnership and really saying the best of, I guess you'd say, if we're talking about the apprenticeship, the best of worker skilled union trade education and higher education coming together in a new way that is realizing that, you know what, just training workers, that's not the future either. We need workers who are incredibly talented, who know what they're going to do on the job, but then have the opportunities to do more. Man, but now though, Johnny, it's time for your moment of zen. What history shows is that people who seem to have no power, who did not have the money, people who did not have the military force at their disposal, who did not control the means of communication, were able, nevertheless, at certain points in history, to change their lives because they found their own kind of power, the power of organized people.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. Remember, all week long, you can grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, on the Civic Media website or at bustedpencils.com. And don't be late for homeroom on Monday. And make sure you catch class in session next week on Wednesday and find us Friday for, of course, one of our favorite things, producer Jacob's Choice. And again, if you're so inclined, tune in at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for this 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.